Hello and welcome to Just Bugs, an appreciation podcast for those oft-ousted creatures we humans call bugs, despite their official classifications. I'm your host, Savannah, and today I have my co-host, Matt, with me.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. That's good.
Howdy.
Today we're going to talk about water striders. This one's fun. They're real cute, sounds real simple, real easy, real sweet, but they're kind of vicious, turns out. You'll see.
I like fun. Bring on fun.
Bring on the fun. Here we go with the scientific classification. The most fun part. So it's part of a family called, Giridae. We're going to go with that. And it is of the order Hemiptera, which is true bugs. So true bugs are insects. They're just going to be very special types of insects that have mouth parts that are designed for piercing and sucking.
Thank you. Yes, we've talked about true bugs before. It's always confusing to me. Everything's a true bug to me. There's no false bug. So thank you for clarifying.
Of course. The cicada is a good example of another true bug. But, and that mouth part that they use for piercing and sucking, it's called a rostrum. This is important.
Rostrum. Okay.
Rostrum.
I'm using my rostrum.
You have one?
It's right here.
It's beautiful. So some common names for the water strider. Water skeeters. Water scooters.
Nope.
Water skippers. Water skimmers. Water bug.
Yay!
And pond skaters.
We got the one that I heard of.
Water bugs?
Water bug.
All right. Well, good. You never heard water striders?
No.
Water skippers?
Water strider sounds like something from like a, I don't know, like an action sci-fi film or something.
That's what these
get are. To the water strider!
Pretty sure you're going to feel like these are from an action sci-fi film by the end.
Awesome, I'm in.
Well, maybe. I mean, a very mild action-y, mostly sci-fi.
It's getting boring and boringer and boringer by the second.
It'll be great.
Okay. Don't pitch movies to me.
So what do these names tell you about the water striders?
Water plus bug.
Water plus bug, that's correct. So they are a Plustian species. Plustin?
I know what that means.
Plustin. Plustin species. They survive on the surface of water. They're surface living animals.
Yes, I've seen these things. I never looked at them up close, but it's fascinating that they can stand on the water.
Agreed. Yeah, kind of when you're far away, they just look like a bunch of little dots on the water.
Yeah, it's like you can almost see like their feet like depressing the surface of the water into dents. So you see like four or six dents or something. And then they're just kind of like dents moving along. And you're like, that's a thing.
It is. It's a thing.
It's alive.
Yep. So they're anatomically built to have weight distribution that allows them to walk or stand on the top of the water surface. So they just avoid breaking that water tension.
Does their body touch the water also, or is it mostly just their feet?
So their feet are going to be what's touching the water at all times, but their body can touch the water. It's not like hot lava or anything.
Well, I didn't know if they like laid on it and then they would like sink or something because it was like not displaced properly. That wouldn't make sense.
Yeah. They still got that weight distribution. They're good. And then they do dip into the water sometimes when they want to, but they're good at staying on the top for sure.
I have a question. How come boats don't have feet then? Could they?
They could. I think there
are
some.
They'd have to be massive, right?
If you think about it, there's those canoes from like, what's that show that we used to watch all the time? Like the surviving.
Alone?
That one. So every time they make a boat, they make little like side feet.
Oh, yeah.
Because if it's like too narrow, they want them to have that weight distribution on the side. So there you go.
So it doesn't fall over. Okay. Yeah. Boat feet. Got it.
Boat feet. So there are 1,700 species of the Giridae. Whatever. The water striders, there are 10% of that number of the 1,700 are going to be marine species, so ocean bugs.
That's cool. Yeah, you wouldn't think there'd be that many just because, like, the ocean's so vicious. It's like a wet desert.
Whoa.
Which is...
That's deep, Matt.
I know it's contradictory, but if you think about it, I mean, it kind of is.
I like that a lot. Wet desert.
Yeah.
Anyways, ocean species are actually pretty rare. I'm going to give you some overwhelming statistics right now.
I'm ready to be overwhelmed.
I'm starting at the top and I'll bring it back to the ocean, I promise.
Okay.
So, the insects that are currently present on the Earth, or were so as of 2020, were in the 10 quintillions.
Quintillion?
Yeah, quintillion. So that's a 10 with 18 zeros behind it.
Not only can I not fathom that number, I can't fathom the number with that many zeros.
Well, this might help a little
bit. Like the actual written number.
Oh, that's a good point. Just picture all the zeros.
Yeah.
All of them. That statistic is according to the Entomological Society of America, ESA. And then...
ESA.
But anyways, just to help you kind of put that into perspective a little bit, this is still kind of an astronomical number, but for every one person, there are 1.4 billion insects present on the Earth.
That's pretty intense. I like it, though.
Yeah,
I wonder if how much their body mass compares to our body mass.
That is some numbers, and I'm not good at maths.
How many bugs am I?
Like a lot of... It depends on the bugs.
Am I that many billion bugs if they were stacked on top of each other?
This is quite a tangent. This is such a tangent. I am sure you're many, many bugs. I don't want to get into that, though.
Thank you.
That's quite a lot. I don't like picturing you as a bug being.
Hell.
So... Of those 10 quintillion, there are 900,000 unique species of insect. And actually, I said bugs. This is all insect species. That's not counting what I call bugs, arachnids, arthropods, etc.
We make our own definitions here.
It's true. However, these facts, strictly insect.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. So 900,000 unique species of insect at any given time. That we know of, to be fair. So.
It's a lot. Got it.
So many. So of the different species that exist on the planet, you know, humans, etc. That's going to be 80% of the total, you know, species that exist.
That's a lot of species.
Right. Overwhelming.
I wonder if it's just easier to be small. I don't know.
That's, again.
I'm sorry.
You got all the deepest questions today. So, anywho, of those 900,000 insects, 30 to 40,000 are going to be aquatic, so that's any kind of water-related insect. And then only about 100 live in the ocean or on the ocean.
Oh, I thought you were going to say on land. I was like,
what?
I was like, I think there's more. The 100 on the ocean does make sense because yes. Wet desert. That's why I think.
Because wet desert, salt, and lots of waves and such.
Salt makes it wet desert.
No. Water makes it wet desert.
Oh. Salt makes water wet, desert, never mind.
It's okay. So let's talk more about the water striders, the reason we're here. It's cool, some of them are oceanic. What do they look like? So they range from a size of 2 to 36 millimeters. That's a big range. But essentially, the smallest are going to be like 0.02 centimeters or like 0.08 inches, and then the largest are going to be like 3.6 centimeters to like 1.42 inches, and that's actually just like most species. There are a couple species that are bigger than that, I believe.
That's pretty big already.
That's the biggest one for sure. Most of them are between 2 and 22 millimeters. That's what it was. That's what my brain was doing.
Okay. Yeah, so most of them are smaller.
Biggest one's going to be 36 millimeters, 1.4 inches, but most of them range between the 2 to 22 millimeters. Millimeters. So that varies by species. Most of the time, the females are going to be larger than the males. That's not true for the largest species. For them, the wingless variant of the males gets to be the largest size. That's that 3.6 in length, and they also get 4 inches wide. So that's really big.
There's a wingless variant? Does that mean some of them have wings and some don't?
Yes, it does. So I'm going to tell you all about that. That's called polymorphism. So there's two or more forms or morphs within a species, or they also call it alternative phenotype sometimes, because a phenotype is like what your features are.
Ooh. Genetically. Science.
Science. Oh, and I said 3.6 inches. It's actually 3.6 centimeters, but the length of the legs at the longest is the 4 inches. So
gotcha.
There you go. That if that doesn't make any sense, just look up a picture because I don't know how to make that clear. I'm bad with this stuff. So what do they look like in color? They're brownish or grayish or tannish or a combination of all of those with a muted orange highlight type vibe.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of them now and it's indeed just as you said.
Mm-hmm. They kind of look like a shrimp to me, but like only in the face.
Yeah, they definitely got a shrimpy face, that's for sure.
Agreed. They've got two compound eyes that kind of stick out of their face a little bit. And they've got antenna, two of them. And they have 4 segments each. And then the antenna are going to be about the same size as the head.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty interesting. They've got big old eyes.
They're really buggy.
Very buggy indeed.
So their thorax is going to be long and narrow, but generally pretty small in comparison to the rest of them. And then they typically are covered in these micro hairs. So what do those micro hairs do? They repel water.
Yeah, for sure,
especially if you live on water. So it can break up the water that falls on them. It can help them to stay buoyant, etc. Micro hairs, very important for the life of the water livers.
Interesting.
So the wings. We mentioned that they do have polymorphism. The wing length kind of changes between winter and summer morphs, I guess. So in the winter, I think they have shorter ? But in general, it affects their ability to fly. So some evolve to have no wings at all. And then if they live on choppier water, they'll typically have shorter wings. And then the long wings are better for flying. Short wings, not so good.
So is it based on like need? Like, you know, if their water is just less stable, they probably need to fly around more.
Yeah. So it said that the long wings are good for flying to nearby other like watery areas. So I think the shorter wings are really just there to get shorter distances. So like if it's choppy, they can like just hop kind of with their wings flying.
I see.
Yeah. But if they need to like get to another pond, they're going to need longer wings.
Makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And the reason that they would do that is if it gets like too crowded in their pond.
Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah, they just
start fluttering off.
This place is not it. It's too busy here. So they have 6 legs because they're insects. They have very specific ways that they move about with these legs. Their first legs, they have adopted to be kind of like claws, kind of. They have claws that start at the center of their leg, kind of like a praying mantis that kind of like clamp shut if they need them to.
Mm-hmm.
So they got that for their first legs. And then the second set of legs is longer than the first, but shorter than the last. And it's used for motion in the water. And then the third legs are the longest, which seems odd, but apparently it's great for balancing.
the boat things.
Ah, yes.
Those are the boat legs.
Those are the boat legs. Indeed, they are. They're for balance and for steering.
Indeed, boat.
Boat? Boating. So we like to talk about anatomical defenses. I'm going to be pretty straight with you guys. I don't think there are any for this guy. He just is. He just does. He doesn't really have a good defense except for, like, you know, being able to walk on water.
That's a defense and an offense if you think about it, because like nothing can get it over the water, and then anything struggling in the water, he's like, hey, you need help, buddy, and then he just starts munching on their head,
right? Because it's definitely not helping them for sure.
Well, I mean, they think help. They're like, oh, like, this,
oh, thank goodness,
this long rope legged boy is gonna come help me,
this boat boy is here to save me. So how they walk on water? Pretty cool. I wish I could walk on water. How do they do it? They have hydrofuge hair piles, which is just ultra hydrophobic hair clumps, basically.
So yeah, like water resistant hair clump.
But like super water resistant.
Super hair clump.
The water resistantest.
The clumpiest.
So those hairs cover their whole body, and each one of the hairs has like thousands of micro hairs on it. So lots
hairs
of
on hairs.
Branchy hairs everywhere. That sounds so gross, but they look super
cute.
It
sounds terrible, really.
It does
sound
kind of gross. But anyways, it breaks up the water that falls on them, and that means that the water can't weigh them down anymore. Great. Excellent. So, hydrophobic legs and foot pads, plus even weight distribution due to the long body and the legs and such, gives them the ability to move with the water and not break the surface tension.
Yeah, like whenever I found out these guys could stand on water, I was trying to think of like how they would do that. And I always imagine everything, at least for me, is like flat and smooth, because everything we make is flat and smooth to do everything when it comes to like,
it's visually pleasing.
Well, maybe I just, you know, for like boats and like airplanes and cars, everything's sleek. Sure, yeah. And yeah, so yeah. I was imagining like a sleek, wide pad thing. And then it always ends up being something hairy.
Yeah, it's always hairy for these guys. I don't know why.
How come none of our stuff is hairy?
Oh, we should think about that, because it looks like it works real good.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a weight thing, though. Like, they're so small. I don't know.
Be a lot of hair, yeah.
I don't understand physics on the level that I need to understand physics to have this conversation. So where are they found? They are cosmopolitan species, from what I could find. That just means, like, they can live in most climates. They live everywhere.
Yes.
Except for Antarctica, mostly.
Yeah, Antarctica. I wonder if there are any bugs there, but that's just another side
tangent.
That's
a topic for a different day, for sure. I'm sure there are, though, and we're going to cover them.
Well, let's do it.
Well,
yeah.
We're going to
do it right now.
No.
Screw this. Let's go. Let's move on.
New topic. So, water striders eat invertebrates. So, that's going to be, you know, arthropods, your spiders, your insects, etc. The way that they do this is, as you described, if a spider or an insect falls in the water, they just, you know, walk on over. They're like, hey, you need help, buddy? And then they just stab them with their proboscis.
Ow.
Yep. And they inject their digestive enzymes, and then they suck out the bug juices that they've created.
Oh, what a terrible lifeguard.
For sure. Worst lifeguard. So yeah, they're attracted to the ripples from the fall. And then sometimes they'll do this in groups. So lots of them will come and hoard on one bug that has fallen in the water.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I think piranhas.
That sounds scary. I don't want to experience life-size versions of this.
No. I like them the size that they are, certainly. So I did mention that there are some ocean-dwelling ones. Those are the halobates genus. They eat zooplankton as well, which are like tiny floating animals. And I can tell you a little bit more about that. So there's two different categories of zooplankton. Meroplankton, which are larvae of mollusks, crustaceans, coral, worms, fishes, etc. Insects even.
Really?
Yeah, just itty bitty versions of all of those things.
I thought plankton was a thing, not like a small thing. Small things.
Yeah, yeah. So it is. So the other type of zooplankton is haloplankton, which are always plankton. They are their own little organisms that are always plankton. Plankton has lots of other subcategories that describe different types of planktons. That is definitely a topic for a different podcast, because that is full on oceanography, and it's pretty complex, actually.
I learned enough.
Good. They also will eat that genus will also eat floating insects, so just like any insects that land on the ocean.
Yeah, the same as the other ones.
Correct. So, reproduction.
Your favorite part.
The mating for these guys can be pretty dangerous. Not necessarily because of our typical reason, which would be like sexual cannibalism, because they don't really have that necessarily. The reason it's dangerous for them is that part of the mating ritual includes the male making intentional ripples on the water with its front legs. So, ripples can bring predators, so it can be dangerous. Because of this, the female will choose to come over to the male to stop him from doing what he's doing to stay.
Stop bouncing the waterbed.
Yes. Plus monster, though. So, like, it'd be like if you're bouncing the waterbed and there's a monster underneath who doesn't know you're there unless you're bouncing the waterbed.
I like the analogy.
Yes. So, it's kind of like a game of chicken. He's like, hey, look what I'm doing. And she's like, I'm going to die if I don't go over there. So I guess I'm going over.
I like how she just runs over like, you stop it. No, she's like waving her arms like like the guy in Jurassic Park trying to like get its attention. No.
I love it. So there's two different signals that they can send using those ripples. The first is a repel signal. So that tells the other water strider that they're there. If it's not returned, bingo, there's a lady. For the most part, there's a caveat to that.
There's always a caveat.
Yeah, you know, it's nature. If the female doesn't like him, she'll just send another repel signal right back. Like, I'm a dude. Sorry, no thanks. The second signal that they will send is a courtship signal, which is sent once the male knows it's a female.
Hmm.
Essentially, so that she can, you know, come on over. Yes, very good. We love it. There's actually one more signal that can be not part of that process, and that's just to communicate threats. It's like a threat communication signal that water striders can send to each other, but it's not really
like an outside threat or like a threat like I'm gonna get you.
I think it might be more that I'm gonna get you, because they actually will eat each other.
Of course they will.
Yeah, so they do have cannibalism as part of their whole business. But not sexual cannibalism. So we got one plus, right?
That's good.
Yeah, we love that. Very good. So after the mating process, the females will dive into the water and lay their eggs on a stable surface underneath the water. So the bottom of the lake or a rock or a plant, etc.
That's crazy. I didn't know they could go under the water, too.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know either until, you know, research.
I wonder if they go under for... They probably don't go under for any other reason.
They don't have any reason to other than just laying those eggs. And sometimes they will actually have their eggs on, like, the surface of the lake. Like, the... Not the surface of the lake, but the shore. But only if it's really calm waters.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yep. So, after that, the quality of the eggs is going to be dependent on the nourishment that the female got while she was mating. Like, during the season. So, if... She's a very weak individual. She probably didn't get very much food. And so her eggs are going to be weaker and less of them. Whereas like a very fit individual is going to have like the most eggs and they're going to be like good to go.
That makes perfect sense.
Selection. So in the tropical climates, they can have eggs all year round. Elsewhere, only in the warm months. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So essentially in non-tropical climates, it's twice a year. And then they will also overwinter in cold climates or cold weather.
I wonder where they go for that.
That's a bit... Oh, actually, I know this. You know, because research. they apparently will go on, like, the bottom of, like, leaves that have fallen in the water or over to the shore and hide inside the leaf beds or leaf detritus.
That seems so obvious, yet I didn't think of it.
You know? You don't think about leaves when you're in the water. This is different.
It's true. Those are tree parts.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Tree parts. So their lifespan is about a year. Are they social? Sometimes. But like I mentioned, they do practice cannibalism. So during the mating season, they're pretty solitary. They really only have the one mate and everybody else is a danger. In the non-mating season, they can live in cooperative groups, but typically, it's just mom and the babies until they get their wings and then they bounce. Because most species are unable to differentiate family from non-family, so they'll just kind of eat willy-nilly.
Yeah, you gotta be careful about that.
Correct. Yeah, so it's definitely safest to leave as soon as possible. And if the groups become too dense, the cannibalism starts to get a lot more, or they'll kind of fly into a neighboring pond or water.
Yeah, if there's it's that capable. Much food around, why would they bother looking for non-family food?
Right, exactly. I agree with that statement. And also, I did forget to mention, so did I forget to mention? I'll ask you. The males...
I'm here too.
When they're mating, the males will actually kind of like hook onto the female and they'll stay there for the whole mating season. Did I mention that?
No, but we talked about it on a recent episode.
I see. Okay, yeah. So he'll just hang out. Like as soon as they're good, they're mated, he stays there for the whole season. That's just because it's easier for him to get all the genes where he needs to go and there's no competition from other males that way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So that's that. So they are pretty common. As I mentioned, they're cosmopolitan. I've seen them tons, like my whole life, on every lake ever. But they're pretty cute. I like them.
Yeah, I guess now that I think about it, I've seen them quite frequently as well.
They're not dangerous. They don't bite humans. They're really not a threat in any way. They do have internal parasites, some of which are of a family that are very dangerous to humans. They can cause things like sleeping sickness, wasting disease in livestock, stuff like that.
What's sleeping sickness?
Sleeping sickness is a disease that is pretty much fatal. Basically, it changes your sleep patterns as one of its symptoms, and that's why it's called that. But it is very dangerous. Most of the time, not a good thing to have. That's just me going off the dome from what I remember from my schooling. So don't quote me too hard on that, but it is a pretty dangerous disease. However, just because it's in their gut does not mean it can get to our gut. They actually have no vector from the water striders to the humans, so they're not dangerous to us in that way.
Even if you eat them?
I wouldn't do that. But but still, I don't know that they could. It's just, it's possible, though, for sure.
I'm not sure where
maybe don't eat those.
Yeah, I'm not sure why I want to eat all the bugs recently, but...
Yeah, stop it. I guess it's a good protein source for the future.
And funny.
It's not funny. but yeah, so they can carry those parasites, but they're really not going to be dangerous to you. Even if they like get caught in your hair or in your swimsuit or something like that, they're not going to bite you. They're just not dangerous. Just not. So birds eat them. Also fish and frogs. However, fish are not the main predator, and they're really only going to eat them if they are starving. The water striders actually have scent glands on their thorax that make them just... really unappetizing. They're like, blech, you smell.
Yuck.
No thanks. Yeah, so they're not going to eat them
stinky
too often.
Food is bad.
I agree. Birds don't seem to care, apparently.
No, they're freaking dinosaurs.
Birds are like, I'm going to eat that.
I'll eat anything.
The other thing that does eat them, you know, is other water striders. So we talked about the cannibalism. It typically is against nymphs, so like the juvenile form. And it's usually due to like a turf war over mating grounds. So if there's nymphs in an area where one mating couple is, they'll pretty much eat those nymphs because like this is their territory and they need that space for
honey, someone left food here.
Mm-hmm. Free food. Or, you know, sometimes they'll just eat them because they're hungry.
Yeah.
Insects.
Insects.
So environmentally, they are pretty positive. They do eat mosquitoes. We love that.
Ooh, yes.
Yes, we always want more mosquito eaters. They also keep other insect populations in check. Just as most species, they have a very good place in their ecosystem. And so it's important to keep that biodiversity. And so they have their place. Good place to be.
I like it. As long as they're not invasive and all that jazz, you know.
Yeah, they're not, because there's just a species of them pretty much everywhere. So thankfully we don't have that problem. So yay, water striders.
Get to the water strider!
So some cool little facts. They're sometimes called Jesus bugs because of their obvious ability to walk on water.
Oh, I thought they would turn it to wine.
Maybe. I don't know. I've never tried to drink any lake water, but I don't think so. So that whole thing is stated in the New Testament. It's one of the miracles of Jesus. The New Testament is apparently the second half of the Christian Bible.
I knew that much.
I did not. Some other cool facts. The oceanic genus, the halibates, were heavily studied by Buchanan White in 1822 to 1883 on a very important expedition called the Challenger Expedition. The reason that's important is it is something that started or at least significantly increased the study of oceanography. So, the very important stuff.
Is Buchanan like the oldest name ever?
I think so. It's such a good one though.
It is like, really good.
If you saw the spelling, it doesn't feel good. Like it doesn't look good, but it sounds just like excellent.
It does sound really, really good.
Buchanan.
Buchanan.
Who's Daisy Buchanan? Is she from Gone from the Wind?
I don't know. Okay. Tangent.
You started it. Okay, one more cool fact before we head out of here. According to a Nat Geo article, the males have hooks that they will hook onto the female's eyes to stay attached to them.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It's not. That's horrifying. They literally like have adapted to have hooks that perfectly fit around their eye sockets to just hold onto their eyeballs.
That's so bad.
I mean, their eyes must be pretty sturdy, but...
Well, but they are giant.
They are huge.
They definitely need some connectors back there.
Well, Matt, do you have any questions for me today?
I think today has been a good ride. I don't think I have any extra questions that I didn't bring up on this spot.
Very good. Very good. So, do you want to take us out this time?
If I can remember all the things.
I feel like you can.
All right.
Let's see it.
Well, thank you guys for listening to Just Bugs. Mm-hmm. If you want to see some pictures of bugs, you check out the Instagram. We actually got some pictures from the actual photographers that take pictures of bugs to sign off on us using them. So mm-hmm. then you can go to our page. You can follow the links to their page and like their stuff. Rate and review the podcast. Share it with your friends. I mean, sharing is caring. That's how we grow. let's see. We got Twitter, and that's mostly it. We're on some other platforms, but they're not updated quite too frequently. Mm-hmm. And look forward to the next episode.
Also the email.
Ah, so- dang it. I was so close. So close, Matt. justbugspodcast@gmail.com.
Yes. And all those other handles are also at justbugspodcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. And as always, don't squish bugs. Get to the water, Strider!
To the Strider!
Bye, guys.
Bye.